This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's access media station, Plains FM, and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Next on Plains FM, we have Movie Talk, a program for all things cinema-esque, for the discerning film and video junkie.
Welcome again to Movie Talk. Today we have sick, twisted fun of the highest order in The Monkey, which is totally different to Tina and I'm Still Here, which are both deeply caring films.
Oh, that's odd. I don't remember locking this.
You wouldn't have to remember if my aunt had a wind-up toy monkey at the yard sale.
Oh, not a cherished childhood memory now, was it?
The coroner said it was an accident, but it was no accident. It was a monkey. When I was a kid, my twin brother and I found something that loved to kill.
In the rather offbeat horror movie, The Monkey, two young twin brothers find their father's old monkey toy in the attic, thereby starting a series of gruesome deaths. Charlie Sierra has been off to the Alice Cinema to see the surprisingly weird film. Charlie, I found this morbid comedy to be rather good fun. What did you think of The Monkey?
Well, I was thinking that I was going to see a completely horror, like, directed movie. Like, you know, like, this is a horror movie. But you're right to say that it's more, yeah, it's more a little bit like a dark comedy with some horror elements.
Yeah. I mean, to me, the film is so totally improbable because this is not a live monkey. He's never lively. He never actually does it. Well, he does things. He kills people. I'm not quite sure how.
Yeah.
But he's sort of set up to it. He has this key on in his back, and when people turn it, that wakes this monkey toy thing up, and then it runs off and kills somebody.
Well, actually,
that doesn't quite make sense to me.
Because actually, well, he doesn't actually quite run off and kill people. If you remember, they wind him up with the key, and all he does is he lifts up his hand holding the drumstick, and then when he starts playing the drums, that is when bad things happen. But the monkey himself, yeah, everything he's doing is just playing the drums.
Yeah, that's right.
It. Yeah. I definitely found it. Of course, I was thinking, oh, this is going to be a horror movie. That's going to be pretty fun. But the opening act, the opening scene has a very famous comedy actor called Adam Scott. And I think putting him there and just the way that that first scene is made, it makes you understand what you're about to see is going to be very exaggerated, highly ridiculous,
yeah,
and very funny.
Yeah, yes, and that's the whole point is,
yeah,
because you do get some really good laughs out of the whole thing.
That's right.
So quite often it's total disbelief that makes you laugh.
Shock laugh, right? Because you're like so shocked with what they're showing you that the natural response is just to laugh it off. I'm of course not going to say a lot, but like the scene with the sleeping bag, remember when they open it and ugh.
Oh, it's yeah, just yeah, like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was just like, what is this? You know? But of course, it's also very important to mention that this movie is based out of Stephen King's short story.
Oh, yes, that's yeah, right. Well, he wrote those sort of short stories, horror short stories.
He is considered the best horror writer in the world. He's written things like It and like, of course, the one in the hotel, The Shining, you know, things like that. But he's actually very good at other genres as well. If you've seen like The Running Man, you know, that's a really good story as well. He also wrote Shawshank Redemption, which is also a really good movie. And he also wrote The Green Mile, which are movies that are a little bit more family, more fun. And I definitely think this short story of his, I have never read it, but if I base myself solely on what I saw in the movie, I'm going to find it to be maybe more towards the comedy than towards the horror.
Mm. Oh, yeah, okay, fair enough. Yeah, but I mean, to me, any horror movie, purely by definition, has got a lot of odd, peculiar things happen, people or monsters or supernatural creatures of going around doing these terrible things, which quite often mostly result in death for someone.
Yes.
So you know, so in that sense, this film certainly has all of this.
Yeah.
But they do add that highly improbable comedy to the whole thing. So you see it through comic eyes somehow.
That's right.
Which gives another sort of a more easy dimension to watch.
Yes, and I actually think that that's something that a lot of movie makers are doing nowadays. The last one that we saw together, you and I, it was the one about the female robot, remember? That.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so that movie is also kind of a slasher horror movie, but it also has a lot of comedy aspects to it. And if you think about like other movies like what's the one with the doll, the latest one, Megan, you know, like all of those movies that are a horror in paper, but they're actually more than that. And a lot of movies just recurring to the comedy relief nowadays.
Yeah, well, I think the whole attitude in filmmakers and by people around the world has changed. They are not so terribly on and off in their attitude towards horror movies. I remember in Australia back in the 1930s, 1940s, horror films were banned from being shown.
Oh, wow.
This was a time of things like the Dracula films and the Frankenstein films and this sort of thing. But they were actually banned from screening even.
Oh, that's fascinating.
I mean, that seems good. Looking at it back now, that's hard to understand or believe why they should do it.
One of my favorite scary movies is from Australia, The Babadook. I absolutely love that movie. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no. So anyway, this one is good fun.
Oh, and definitely
recommend it. And I was just thinking while I was watching it that we've been seeing quite another odd monkey movie. That was The Better Man, which was about the English pop singer Robbie Williams, who is portrayed in the film as and a big ape in a suit.
That's right.
So this is a good follow-up to that.
That's right. And honestly, like the acting of the main character in this movie, the monkey, is absolutely amazing. He carries the whole movie himself.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Okay, thank you. That was Charlie Sierra with his views on the monkey, and I'm Hans Petrovic on Plains FM 96.9.
Mum, please, can you help me warm up?
Okay, breathe.
We need to show that you're at least trying to make your situation better. Or they're going to take your benefit, you're going to lose your power, pee your pants, and then I have to come clean it up.
In Tina, the life of a Samoan woman is disastrously changed when her daughter is killed in the 2011 Christchurch earthquake. Losing her personal will to live and exist properly, she becomes a teacher at a rather elite school where she develops a choir among the students. Mary Gibson has been off to the Alice Cinema to see this music-filled drama, and I was surprised that this film was more about top-quality singing than the earthquakes. But so, Mary, what did you think of Tina?
Look, I was really interested to see this. I'd seen the shorts of it, and I thought to myself, this is going to be really something good, because it was filmed in Christchurch, so you see and you recognise so many things. But this film, for me, from the opening sequence, it totally triggered me. I had no idea that seeing that footage from the earthquakes displayed so visibly and with the noise and the feeling and everything, the impact it would have on me. But that was really only a very short part of the whole movie, really. The movie was obviously about this lady Marietta, not Tina. Tina, as we know, is the Samoan word for mother. But it was about her daughter who had died in the earthquake. And we see that. And as I said, you know, I felt quite triggered. I was very close to tears in the movie. But then as it moves on and you see and you hear and you learn what her life is about and how she moves through this whole process of recovery, not very well, but ends up in this position, as you say, about becoming a singing teacher at an elite school. And that is filmed at the Arts Centre here in Christchurch. So you're looking at it and you're going, oh, I know that, I know that, I recognise that, well, I see that. Yeah, what's happening? So for me, there was a lot of that going on as well as watching the movie. The movie itself is written, produced and directed by Mickey Magaziva, who is the brother of the late Pua Magaziva. And I noticed at the end of the film they mentioned for Pua, and Pua had committed suicide. And in the movie there is with this young guy who is brought up by Marietta and looked after by her until adulthood, and he tries to commit suicide.
Oh, yes.
So there's this whole, you know, there are so many elements to this movie, not just about a woman who has lost a child and teaching singing, but that in itself then comes together beautifully, you know, like she's just pushing the norms all the time, you know, and pushing back. And I wanted to smack that guy who was the assistant principal because he was so bigoted and so
racist
that, you know, I just wanted to smack him. I'm not a violent person, but I just thought, oh, my God, this guy is really irritating me. But she is just so calm and beautiful, and the way that she loves and nurtures those children, because this is really their movie as well, and it's a movie of discovery. So I'm hoping you felt the same way about it, Hans.
Oh, yes. But what did surprise me was I assumed it was going to be basically largely an earthquake film or the direct effects physically about the earthquake. But that becomes more, very much background to the other events afterwards. Of course, it's the earthquake that upset this woman who has a daughter killed there, and she herself then finds it very difficult to do anything for about three years before she gets another job as a school teacher. And as it happens, as you've said, she goes to this rather classy sort of a school. Mm. But then it's a totally different film, because that wonderful way of singing that most of those those kids in the film had, you had an excellent sound for singing. And for the last half of the film or so, they're on about half of that time, you know. So it's not quite the film, again, that I had expected.
Yeah. Look, I don't know. I didn't go with massive expectations as to exactly what this film would be about or what it would be like. And I've learned that over the years that we've been doing movie reviews, to kind of put my own thinking in the background and then come and enjoy it. But for me, it was just beautiful. It's beautifully shot.
Yeah.
I know the daughter of I know the woman, some friends of mine, their daughter did the costuming. So I spent a lot of time looking at the costuming. You know how I get a bit absorbed by that and what the costumes look like. And I'm thinking, oh, how did she sew all the, you know, the trim around the collars, et cetera, et cetera. So it's really lovely in so many aspects. And Anna Pella Politava'o, I apologise if I've said her name wrong or pronounced her name wrong. She just holds the screen the whole time, doesn't she?
She's on screen virtually all the time, as you just said.
Yeah.
But it's her moods, her distances. She's in that film walking around, you know, dealing with difficult people and her memories of the past and all this sort of a thing. And she did an excellent job with that. And but then, on the other hand, the film seriousness is handled with a light touch of life. So it's not, the film isn't all doom and gloom around her. You know,
it's, oh, no.
In any way, no. Like you might expect in an earthquake film.
No.
And the film is sprinkled even with small moments of comic relief in it. And
Look, there are some real laugh-out-loud moments. I know I did right through that movie, I think, and I was laughing out loud, and I thought, oh, am I the only one laughing here? But, you know, it's 2 hours long, and it doesn't seem it. It just flows nicely, and it has a really nice beginning and a really nice ending. I think this is a movie well worth seeing, particularly if you're from Christchurch.
Mm-hmm. Good. Thank you very much. That was Mary Gibson with her views on Tina. I would also like to thank the sponsor of this Movie Talk program. They are the Harcourt's Grenadier Accommodation Centre, which is located at 98 Morehouse Avenue. If you're looking for a place to live, check out the Harcourt's Accommodation Centre website. That's assetmanagers.co.nz. That address again, assetmanagers, one word, .co.nz.
Me Luke, me Luke love me.
Conta me Luke, me Luke love me.
Taque, taque, sotaque, diz taque, taque, xim.
Vai ficar andando no carro daquele playboy, não?
Ô pai, eu achava que playboy era quem ficava bebendo uísque, fumando charuto o dia inteiro.
Sua mãe, mulher mais linda do mundo.
Seus documentos. Anda, anda!
Daqui a pouco passa.
In I'm Still Here, a mother is deeply disturbed when her family's life is shattered by an act of political violence during the tightening grip of military dictatorship in Brazil in 1971. Robin Munro has been off to the Lumiere Cinema to see this deeply caring film. Robin, what did you think of I'm Still Here?
I was very impressed. I didn't know very much about the stories of dictatorships and so on, but I think every family in the world could identify with this. And what this junta was doing was dragging people out of their homes and executing them.
Yeah.
It wasn't clear in the film that that was necessarily what had happened, but the family of a loving father and mother with five children who lived right next to the beach in Rio de Janeiro were suddenly plunged into this darkness. The father just completely disappeared, and including that the mother and one of the daughters was taken to jail and sort of interrogated, intimidated, and she didn't want to upset her family, so she didn't declare that he was probably dead and other things like that, and she kept the family going through this very, very difficult time.
Well, what I liked about the film was that I had assumed it was going to be basically highly critical of the government there at that time, which seems to come and go in Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really strong governments, that, you know, what they do with their people. And so I assumed that that would be the political aspect would be the major part of this film. But what they've done in this film, they've delivered it in a totally different way, in a sort of a caring way.
Mm-hmm.
So that you, for the first 20 minutes or so, or certainly more than a quarter of an hour, it's you're with this family in their home, beaches in the background. They got these kids, four girls and one boy, I think it was.
That's right.
And we see them together, eating together, the boy playing football out with some of the kids in the street, and caring and loving each other. And that sets the scene with them. And this stays all the way through. And, of course, as it goes on and you learn more about them, it is you who then start to care for them and the film.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the best way to get a point across. So it's about about the political scene, thing going on there at the moment. However, it's presented from this family's point of view, who are deeply hurt by by the government, by this military government that they had at that time.
Yes, it's a quite unusual approach and is a little bit hard to work out. The first part of it does seem, everything seems so happy.
Yeah.
But interestingly, the happiness continues. The political background was a little bit that the father of this family had been in the Congress.
Yeah.
And after the military took power, I think about 1964, he'd gone into exile for 6 years, and there were many Brazilian exiles, and they were writing about what went on in Brazil. But in Brazil, you couldn't speak about it, you couldn't write about it. And so one of the daughters was actually at London, in London at the time of his disappearance, and she knew what had probably happened to the father, whereas the family didn't. And the mother, again, wanted to maintain this happiness, this equilibrium in the home, and, you know, didn't want to act sad or claim being a victim. And although stories were written about her by this overseas Brazilians, at one point they wanted to take a photo and they wanted them to look sad. And she said, no, we'll smile.
But yeah, but then after this first 20 minutes that I was talking about, with them all together having a pleasant time and that, these government military fellows come around to arrest the man, the father, took him away and left the rest of the family at home without saying much more to them. And then a few weeks later, they're back again, and they arrest the mother and one of the girls, one of the daughters, and take them away. And I think even lock them in, I think, the same building as where the father is, although the mother never gets the chance to see him or be sure about anything about what may have happened to him.
They were quite a wealthy family, and they had friends in publishing. One owned a bookstore, and some of them left, and some of them didn't. But although they weren't part of the violent resistance to this regime, they were providing a small amount of assistance. But the husband had never told his wife or his family, partly to protect them. And so she was shown photos of people that she knew and was asked, you know, what do you know about them? And it turned out these thugs had basically been watching the house for a long time, watching who was coming and going. But there was no trial or anything. The man was just disappeared. Yeah. And it caused big problems. Luckily, these friends were able to help her to some degree, but she didn't get the death certificate until many, many decades later. And it wasn't easy for her to get by financially as well. You know, he was the main breadwinner in the family. He was an engineer.
Oh, yes, yes.
So, and it's based on a book written by the son, the actual son in the story.
Yeah.
And he knew the director. And he decided to turn the book into a and they also at that time had taken a lot of home videos, maybe not videos, I think 8mm film, I don't know what you call that, but they had a camera, and some of that or film like that is included in the film.
Yeah, so, yeah, that sort, yeah, that gives you that feeling
of the atmosphere, and atmosphere, the family,
yeah,
and
within
so
the home. Yeah,
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 yeah.
They were very good at doing that too, somehow.
Well, I think they also portrayed the dread. Right at the beginning, the oldest daughter is out with her perhaps hippie boyfriends. They're smoking dope a little bit. They're listening to rock music, which, although it may be in Portuguese, sounds quite like the swinging 60s sort of music. But then they are hauled out of their car by soldiers and so on, along with a lot of other people, and searched and asked for their identity documents. And life wasn't all sweetness and light for them.
Yeah. Oh, no. I found this very good. But it still makes its point quite strongly about the terrible things that government was doing to its people. Yeah. And of course, you walk out of there with a pretty good understanding of what circumstances were like there then and concern about what may be happening there now. I mean, they actually managed to make this film in Brazil now, although it wasn't that easy.
A liberal government now, but yes, when the last government changed, the previous president, Bolsonaro, He's now being accused of a plot to kill the current president, the one who won the election. And basically, many people in Brazil, they probably don't want the full truth out about what happened during this, but they admire it.
Yeah, but anyway, I think you could say this film is intentionally distanced from political details, ideology, and even the protest movements.
Yes.
Anyway, it's good stuff. Thank you. That was Robin Munro with his views on I'm Still Here. And I'm Hans Petrovic, inviting you to listen to Movie Talk again on Plains FM 96.9 at midday next Wednesday. This week's program will also be repeated at 11:30 a.m. this Saturday. And you can listen to podcasts of earlier episodes of the Plains FM website, plainsfm.org.nz.